Hi, this is Colin McCallan. Thank you for listening. Please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe so that you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you.
Welcome to Is This Legal? Here are your hosts, attorneys Colin McCallan and Russell Hebbitz.
Yes, we are back. Welcome back to Is This Legal, our lovely legal podcast. My name is Colin McCallan, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Russell Hebbitz.
Hello, hello, everyone.
How's it going, everybody? Thanks for coming back and listening to another episode. Russ, how was your total eclipse, by the way? We're just coming off the total eclipse that we just had a couple of days ago.
We weren't in the path of the totality. I'm actually disappointed. I kind of wanted to see the total eclipse, but I was not. We only got like 70% here. So for me, it was the same as it was, 6 years ago?
Right, exactly. Well, so, we have to wait another 21 years for the next one, I suppose. Hopefully you guys got to enjoy that. That was something. But let's get down to brass tacks, Russ, shall we? We're going to talk about two cases that we've recently covered. We're going to start out with James and Jennifer Crumbly. These were the parents of mass shooter Ethan Crumbly. They just got sentenced in court, Russ. And so we're going to catch up our listeners about that. We've done a couple of podcasts on the Crumbly case. And then after we play a little Is This Legal, we're going to go back to the Gilbert Goons in suburban Phoenix to talk about a couple updates there, talk about actually some more information we have related to the charges, related to that whole thing. Right, Russ?
Yeah, things have been developing there. Like we told you at the time, it was fresh and new, and we got some more information, some more things to talk about with you that we think that everyone is going to find pretty interesting. At least we did.
Exactly. So, but let's go ahead and start. We finally have, I guess, some finality in the cases of Jennifer and James Crumbly. So, just to remind our listeners kind of where things were, we discussed the trial of Jennifer Crumbly at length, both while it was going on before the verdict, and then we talked about, we had a post-verdict podcast. We didn't really talk about James Crumbly at all. They were tried separately.
Right.
James went to trial a little over a week after Jennifer was convicted. It looks like largely, Russ, the same evidence that was presented in Jennifer Crumbly's case was also presented in James Crumbly's case.
Yeah, they were very largely the same cases. We talked about the Jennifer one and why they were tried separately, and it's because they can point the finger at each other.
Right.
And, you know, some evidence may have come in against one that wouldn't have come in against the other, but ultimately, right, it was, like you said, largely the same testimony. The big difference between these two cases, between these two trials, was that while Jennifer Crumbly testified in her own defense, James Crumbly did not.
Yeah, and that was significant. Russ and I spent a lot of time in both of the podcasts we covered this topic on discussing, first of all, what's the move here? Is this a case where you have the defendant testify? If so, what do you have the defendant say? What don't you have the defendant say? You know, ultimately, we concluded that we thought it was probably the best strategy for Jennifer Crumbly to testify. We didn't like the way it happened, though.
Right. We didn't like
we didn't like what she had to say. I don't think the jury did either.
Right. We didn't like her preparation. We didn't like what she had to say. But for all you naysayers out there that were listening to that and then looked at it and said, oh, they said Jennifer should testify and here she is getting convicted.
Right.
Well, all right. How about this? James didn't testify and he still got convicted.
That's correct. So James went the other route. He decided to not take the stand and kind of let the chips fall where they may. And they fell to a guilty verdict for him.
Yeah. So both cases, jury was out roughly one day for both cases. And again, that makes sense because it was such a novel legal issue. It was just imputing liability on the parents who, by all accounts, didn't have any knowledge of what their son was going to do, but they missed all these big warning signs.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I think that clearly the failure to keep the guns safe,
That was huge.
That was a major, major component that led to the verdicts in this case. Now, even though they were tried separately, Russ, they were actually sentenced together. So James and Jennifer Crumley were just sentenced on April 9th. And both of them kind of had an opportunity to say their piece. Both of them had an opportunity to address the court. Victims of the school shooting were also allowed to address the court. Now, Russ, one of the big things we talked about in the Crumley trial, and ultimately what might have been her downfall, is that the prosecutor asked her on cross-examination whether or not she would have done anything differently. And she very, very defiantly stated from the stand, no.
Right.
I would not have done anything differently. And as we talked about, we both, Russ and I, felt like that was a big problem.
Yeah.
You have to acknowledge that maybe you have to acknowledge the temperature check in the room on the other side and know that this was such an abominable tragedy that could have been prevented.
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I think that she really hurt herself when she said that. Now she tried to walk that back a little bit, Russ. She had a chance to address that comment. This is what she said to the judge. At trial, when I was on the stand, I was asked if I would have done anything differently. I testified that I would not have. And that is true without the benefit of hindsight that I have now, she said. There are so many things that I would change if I could go back in time. I knew my son to be a quiet, good kid who loved his pets. I never imagined he would hurt other people in the way that he did.
Yeah, that, Colin, falls so flat. You know, it is two-dimensional. It is built into the question at trial was, would you have done anything differently?
Mm-hmm.
That is built in with hindsight. Like, right. That you don't have to be explicit about that. That is clear in the question they're asking, would you have done anything differently looking back? So for her to say, oh, I didn't understand the question. Oh, well, what was the question then, Jennifer?
Right.
You know, because the question makes no sense otherwise. So, I mean, good try to walk that back, but sorry, that's a fail.
I agree. Now, here's what James says. I think this is even more callous than what she said. This is his statement. I feel horrible for what happened and would do anything to go back in time and change it, but I can't. And I had nothing to do with what happened. I don't know why my son did what he did. He, capitalized, is the only one who knows, he said.
Yeah, so again, no accountability, no responsibility. No. You know,
prosecutors called this a chilling lack of remorse, Russ.
Yeah, I agree with them. Yeah. I agree. I mean, stop it. You started off well, James.
Right.
Like the first several words.
I wish I could go back in time and change anything, but I had nothing to do with it. So if that's the case, what would you change, James? Yeah. And okay, more on James. Russ, there's some other things that he did that maybe didn't bode so well for him. For those of you who don't know, if you ever have the misfortune of being incarcerated, you know, first thing you're going to want to do is call somebody, right? You're going to want to reach out for help and let people know what's happening. Very, very clearly, before you call anybody, there's going to be a recording that plays in your ear saying, hey, anything that you're about to say over this jail call is going to be recorded.
Yeah, jail calls are recorded everywhere in every jail. Now, maybe they're not always listened to, but certainly on a national media case, there's going to be listened to.
Yeah, and that was a warning that James Crumley chose to ignore, Russ, because he was recorded making some really ugly statements about the prosecutor, Karen McDonald. For example, this is one of his quotes that he's saying on the phone to somebody. Karen McDonald, you are effed when I get out. Karen McDonald, you are going down, you stupid B word. Go ahead and record this call. Send it to Karen McDonald. Tell her how James Crumley is going to effing take her down.
So it's not even like he didn't know it was being recorded or he forgot it was being recorded.
Yeah. And this is recorded. Apparently the most recent one of these calls, Russ, is January of 2024.
Yeah.
What 3 months before this idiot's going to trial?
What arrogance,
yeah.
What hubris.
So, Russ, what did they get? What was their sentence? What First of all, what were they exposed to? What was the maximum?
So the maximum was 15 years on each of them for this, and there's no mandatory minimum. So the judge, if the judge wanted to, the judge could have said, okay, well, they've both been in custody this whole time.
Yeah, waiting, that's right.
Right, so they have, what, 2+ years?
Yeah, 2+ years in custody.
Yeah, so the judge and what their lawyers asked for and what the judge could have done is said, okay, credit time served. I think that you've paid your debt. Mm-hmm. That is a good amount of time, and you now can go on probation, or you can go on, you know, in-home detention, or you can just be done.
Right.
Instead, the judge gave each of them 10 to 15 years.
10 to 15 years. Yeah, basically the maximum range she could have imposed. Let's talk about this, Russ, for a second. Some of our listeners may wonder, well, how does a judge arrive at that number? There are a few guiding principles in the criminal justice world that dictate how a sentence is supposed to come down. Russ, what are some of those?
First, deterrence.
Right.
Right? So you have to deter criminal conduct. So a question is this, for a judge thinks through, is this person going to go out and commit new offenses? Mm-hmm. Right? So if I release this person into the community, are they going to be safe? Because if not, then they get a bigger jail sentence because it just keeps them from committing crimes while they're in jail.
Yeah, that's a great point. And going further with deterrence, it's not only deterrence for the offender, it's also deterrence for other people in the community.
Right.
Obviously, the spotlight that's been focused on this case nationally, Russ, is something that we talked about too, and a judge wants to deter other people from ever committing this crime again.
Yeah. So another one is rehabilitation.
Yep.
That is something that judges have to take into consideration. Are there programs? Does this person need rehabilitation? Is it, for example, a substance abuse issue where they can get treatment? Mental health issue, they can get treatment. Whatever. Can they get rehabilitated? And they take that into consideration.
Right.
What's something else, Colin?
Punishment, Russ.
Yeah, that's a big one.
I mean, punishment is kind of the big one where, okay, you committed a crime, you need to be punished for it, and the punishment has to, you know, it has to be commensurate with the crime. And clearly, in this case, that was significant. You've got 4 dead kids, and whether or not this was a direct or indirect consequence, the jury made their decision. And so I think that was significant as well.
I mean,
so a jury has to weigh all this stuff.
A judge.
Or pardon me. Thank you. A judge has to weigh all this stuff. Russ, let me read you what, I apologize, I might mispronounce the name, but there's a woman who gave testimony at the sentencing hearing. Her name is Nicole Biosol. Her daughter, Madison Baldwin, was killed by Ethan Crumley at this school shooting. And this is what this mom had to say to these folks. Not only did your son kill my daughter, but you both did as well. The words involuntary should not be part of your offense. Everything you did that day, months prior and days after, were voluntary acts helping your son commit a murder. Not just one, but multiple.
Yeah.
Again, the emotional weight that this case had throughout the entire, you know, lifespan of the case, Russ, was just clearly palpable.
Right. Yeah, and things like the community, how people feel about these charges, those are all things that affect judges, absolutely. And then in this case, you pair that, this heinous act, 4 innocent lives ended very early. You pair that with the lack of remorse, the lack of accountability on the perpetrators, and that's how you get to a max sentence, people.
Yeah.
That's how you get to a max sentence, and it wasn't a surprise.
Yeah,
knowing those things.
Absolutely. I'll end this segment, Russ, with a quote from the judge as she's issuing the sentence here. This is what she had to say. She said, "These convictions are not about poor parenting. These convictions confirm repeated acts or lack of acts that could have halted an oncoming runaway train. About repeatedly ignoring things that would make a reasonable person feel the hair on the back of their neck stand up," Judge Cheryl Matthews said.
There you go.
So maximum sentence for the James Crumbleys and Jennifer Crumbley. So that's the end of that case. Folks, what do you think about this? Honestly, we want to know, do you think that 10 to 15 years is too much?
Right.
Do you think it's not enough? Do you think there should have been no sentence in the first place?
Yeah, let us know. It's a great question. Let us know. Yeah.
A lot of listeners really, I think, were affected by this case, and we've heard from a lot of you. So let us know what you think about that.
Keep the comments coming. But right now, Colin, let's go ahead and take a break and play a little Is This Legal with our listeners.
That's a fantastic idea, Russ. We will be back on the other side of this break. Stay tuned.
Are you ready to play Is This Legal?
Woot. Our favorite game show. My favorite game show, anyway. Sorry, Jeopardy.
I mean, Price is Right.
Price is wrong.
Exactly. Price is Wrong.
Yeah, and what's what? Don't even get me started on what. Do you remember the supermarket game show where the people are running around with like in supermarkets and they have to like shop the fastest? Supermarket Sweep. That's what it's called.
Okay.
Forget you, Supermarket Sweep. Even though I think you were canceled back in 1986.
Dude, that would have been so fun to be on, though. Yeah, exactly. I would have loved that. Like, as a kid, I'm like, I want to run around a supermarket like
crashing
with a car.
Into each other, right, and stuff. Yeah. All right. Enough nonsense. let's get back on task. So this is where we're going to play our game, where we give you a fictitious legal scenario, and we're going to ask you at the end some questions. Is this legal? Is this pass muster? So here we go. Jebediah and Myrtle just broke up again, Russ.
Aww. Yeah.
Myrtle has just lost her patience with Jebediah's moonshine bootlegging operation, and she moves out of his shack. Jebediah is depressed and lonely, and to make matters worse, he hears a rumor that Myrtle might be flirting with some of the local menfolk in town. Jealous, he places a GPS tracker on Myrtle's new motor car under her muffler and starts surveilling her movements using the tracker. Myrtle's motor car breaks down and she has it fixed, and the mechanic notices the tracker and shows it to Myrtle. Incensed and alarmed, Myrtle calls Officer Cornelius to investigate. Cornelius goes to Jebediah's house and he interviews him, and Jebediah admits to putting the tracker on Myrtle's car. Question number one, dear listener. Should Cornelius arrest Jebediah? And if so, for what crime?
Ooh. Mm-hmm. All right, so unbeknownst to Myrtle.
First of all, I mean, it's interesting, the Industrial Revolution and how it's caught up with Northamptonshire. I mean, we have, we go from horse and buggy to the motor car, and then all of a sudden we have GPS and computers and like tracking and stuff like that. I wonder where he got that kind of tech.
Oh yeah. It's just a little throwback borough. It's not Amish, but it's like the Amish. Anything can happen in Northamptonshire.
Whatever we want or need it to happen in Northamptonshire can tend to happen.
It's really
right?
The best thing about fictional boroughs.
Right. So, okay. So this is probably giving our listeners enough time to put their thinking caps on, tighten them down real tight, and come up with an answer. So should Cornelius arrest Jebediah? If so, for what crime? Russ, what's the answer here? Did Jebediah do anything wrong?
Jebediah did that, ladies and gentlemen, is a classic case of stalking.
Yeah.
Yeah, you cannot surveil someone. You cannot stalk them. This would be a domestic violence crime.
Yep.
So it would have enhancers. This would be fairly serious.
Yeah, the long and short of it is you are not allowed to place a tracker on another person's car. That's an invasion of their privacy. It's at a minimum harassment. And in Colorado, it becomes felony stalking if it causes serious emotional distress to the victim.
Which, and she was, remember, she was incensed
and
alarmed.
She was incensed and alarmed. I remember hearing it.
I remember hearing it.
I didn't say she was cool as a cucumber. Right. Like, I didn't really care. I didn't say any of that.
Right.
Okay.
So that's interesting because that matters. Like, its effect, and oftentimes crime's effects on the victim really does affect whether it's how serious it is or whether it's even a crime.
Now, universally in the United States, it looks like this is at least a misdemeanor in most states. Again, in Colorado, it can arise to a felony. But yeah, it is patently illegal to do what he did. Now, here comes a part two, because you know there's a follow-up, Russ.
You're right.
Now, does anything change if the motor car in question was owned and registered by Jebediah. In other words, they break up, Myrtle hops in the car and starts, you know, running around town. Does that change anything? Does the fact that, that you know, he's the registered owner of the car, does that make a difference in our analysis?
What do you guys think out there?
Think aloud. Talk it out, folks.
Talk with whoever's next to you.
Yeah.
Whether they're listening, if you have headphones on, still talk to them about it.
Yeah. If you're walking down that path, walking the dog, just have a conversation with yourself and kind of look like a crazy person. It's fun.
You talk to your dog. All right. So that's enough time. So the answer is, we think that does make a difference.
That absolutely changes everything.
Yeah.
This is his property.
He's tracking.
It's demonstrably his property. He can put whatever he wants on his car.
It's like putting an AirTag on something that you lose often. You can track your property. You have a right to know where your property is.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Another way of looking at this is, let's say I have a friend who's an Uber driver and I borrow that person's car and they've got the little camera up there that, you know, monitors what happens in the passenger seat. I can't say, oh, he's invading my privacy because he's, you know, got a camera up here. It's his car.
Yeah.
So that's, we think Jebediah would actually prevail on part two there. So
right.
How'd you do at home? Good? Bad? Ugly? Hey, it's all right. It's all good. As long as you had fun. Russ, anything else on this?
Nothing else.
All right. Then we are going to get back to our regularly scheduled programming. Stay tuned. Welcome back, everybody. Hope you had fun playing Is This Legal? So we're going to shift the old proverbial gear and talk about a different case that we also recently talked about. We're going to talk more about the tragic death of Preston Lord in suburban Phoenix, Arizona, involving the Gilbert Goons, as they've been dubbed either by themselves or by media or both. It's a little unclear still. But Russ, we wanted to expand what we talked about last episode on the Gilbert Goons. What's new in that case?
So we have gotten some more information, like we talked about at the beginning, at the top of the episode. We got more information. And so right now, we want to start off talking about really the timeline. We talked about that initially and the fact that it took quite a long time for the investigation to get to the point where arrests were finally being made.
Yeah. And Russ, we talked about both sides of that. We talked about why it might have taken that long necessarily for the police to complete their investigation. But we also talked a little bit why the community wasn't happy with that timeline, why it may have taken too long.
Right. Yeah. So here's some more information we got. So this was a grand jury case. We've talked about this on past episodes. This is not a case where the police just direct filed it, where they put in a filing, said we have probable cause. The DA's office actually convened a grand jury. The grand jury met for about 5 weeks. So they started meeting on February 7th of 2024. So again, you're talking about end of October to early February with a little time in between. So it took some time to get there. The medical examiner's report, which is a key piece of evidence in this case, you have to know how Preston Lord died, right? That was not released to the grand jury or to the district attorney's office until February 14th. So a week into the grand jury, they got that evidence.
Wow.
I really don't know why it took that long for that medical report to be released. Obviously, they want to get it right.
Right.
You know, it's a big case, but still, you're talking about what? All of November, December, January, you know, going on 4 months, 3.5 months for a medical report seems very long to me.
To me as well. And, you know, you couple that, Russ, with, remember, we talked about this last podcast, the timeline of this goes back all the way to November of 2022. Okay, the police start investigating a string of assaults that kind of fit the same MO. Now, again, conceding for a moment that no one died, no one was a victim of a homicide until Preston Lord in October of 2023, there's still a lot of crime going on. And it should, I guess we really are wondering at this point, it seems like this investigation did really kind of take its time.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. Like, back to 2022, we told you on the last episode there were these, you know, these assaults involving juveniles assaulting people. We got more information on that. So one of the co-defendants, guy by the name of William Hines, he this year was indicted for assaulting a person at a house party in November of 2022.
This is separate from the Preston Lord attack.
Completely separate case.
Now, almost.
Yeah, right. I mean, almost a year earlier. Now, it is connected with, you know, he's one of these purported Gilbert goons. So right. This is one of those attacks that was happening. So this attack happened November 2022, wasn't indicted until February 7th of this year.
Okay.
So that's a year plus, almost going on a year and a half, not quite, delay in that indictment. He was arrested for another attack on a 17-year-old. He was arrested in January of this year, Colin, for an attack on a 17-year-old. Sound a little familiar, right? At a house party. Sound a little familiar?
Yeah.
Which occurred 1 month after that assault in 2022. So you're talking about this guy, William Hines, a co-defendant in this case, who was part of, or at least allegedly part of, the Preston Lord assault and murder, who had two separate assaults dating back over a year, for which he was not arrested or indicted until much, much, much more recently.
The only thing I can think of that might defend why it took so long to investigate is because, you know, when you have assaults with multiple people who have different levels of involvement, it does take time to sort those things out. Maybe they didn't get an account of what Mr. Hines is accused of doing until later, when they started charging these guys and everybody's starting to kind of turn on each other. But Russ, I agree with you. I still don't quite understand the delay.
I mean, there's something to what you just said. Like, there's a lot of evidence that they were going through. Like, I think I saw there's over 600 videos that they had to go through, thousands of pages of reports, narratives, witness statements, things like that. So, I mean, I agree. All of that takes time. But still, for me, like, to have, I don't know why they weren't following up on these other assaults. I mean, because no one died. Maybe it's they don't have manpower. I don't know.
Or they just didn't know they were connected maybe until recently. Who knows?
But still, they still should have been investigating it quicker than a year plus.
I agree.
Quicker than a year plus.
Yeah.
I just don't get why.
Well, ultimately, what's going to matter here is whether or not they get convictions, right, Russ? I mean, if they're, of course, defending their actions, saying, hey, we wanted to be thorough, we wanted to be diligent, and I understand that. And if they end up succeeding with this prosecution, I guess all's well that ends well.
I think that's right. Yeah, the ends ends kind of justify the means here, right?
Yeah.
So getting convictions. So let's talk about that. Because last time we talked about that they're all charged with murder one.
Right.
Right. And we went through what the elements of murder one are in Arizona. Well, they are, we found some more information. They are actually not proceeding under the straight murder one statute in Arizona. They are proceeding under Arizona's felony murder statute.
Interesting.
Generally, Colin, what's felony murder?
We've talked about this on this show, but it feels like it's been a while.
Yeah.
But felony murder is a really interesting concept. Basically, if a person is engaged in the commission of a felony, any felony, and someone dies in the commission of that felony, you can be charged with first-degree murder, whether you intended for that killing to happen or not. A classic example of this is two guys decide to rob a liquor store. One guy's the getaway driver, stays in the car. The other guy goes in with the gun, sticks up the clerk. Shooter ends up shooting the clerk. They get in the car, they peel off. Both of those occupants of that car, Russ, can be charged with first-degree murder, even though the getaway driver never even set foot inside the liquor store.
Even if he didn't know that the other guy had a gun.
Right.
Or a loaded gun or a working gun. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. The reality is a death occurred in the commission of a felony, which he knew he was involved in. He was involved in a conspiracy to commit robbery. So both of those guys go down on felony murder.
So that's generally how felony murder works. Now, Arizona has its own felony murder statute.
Every Every state does.
Every state does, exactly.
Colorado has its own, but there are differences. And,
right.
And let's talk about Arizona, because this matters.
Well, let's talk first. Let's talk about how we get to felony murder. What's the charge? What's the crime that they committed? Because it seems like they just beat Preston Lord and killed him.
And here's a hint. If you're thinking that felony is assault, you are mistaken.
It is kidnapping. So all seven co-defendants are charged with kidnapping. Now, three also are charged with aggravated robbery for taking this like $10 pseudo gold chain. But all seven are charged with kidnapping. And what they are saying is that in the commission of the kidnapping, that caused the death of another person, i.e. Preston Lord.
Let's talk about kidnapping for just a second, because kidnapping is a statute that most people just misunderstand. Most people, when they think of kidnapping, they think of like the movie Ransom with Mel Gibson. Do they think of that? That's what I think of. It was like 30 years ago, but
they may not think specifically of the movie, but they certainly think of that concept.
Yeah, you're like you take some kid,
put him in a car,
into a garage in some secret location, then you demand money. Okay, yes, that is kidnapping, but kidnapping is actually very, very simple. Russ, what's the definition of kidnapping in Arizona?
In Arizona, it is a person commits kidnapping by knowingly restraining another person with the intent to do something. And in this case, it's with the intent to inflict physical injury on the victim.
I mean, that's crazy.
It's a very, very, very broad definition.
So just an example of this. Let's say Russ and I are in court and we just think that the prosecutor's being a big bully, so we decide to beat the heck out of him, you know, and I get behind him and pull his arms behind him, and Russ starts punching him in the stomach, you know. I'm guilty of kidnapping.
Yeah.
I am restraining this man where he cannot move. I that's a felony.
Yeah.
So that's what essentially the prosecutor's saying. They kidnapped this kid. They didn't take him anywhere.
Right.
They might not have even moved him to any location,
right,
but they restrained his movement.
Yeah, exactly. They restrained his movement. They restrained him with the intent to inflict physical injury. Doesn't have to be to beat him to death. It could be just to slap him.
Right.
That is enough.
And again, we talked about first degree murder. The other way that first degree murder can be charged in Arizona is an intentional killing, right? And Russ and I expressed our doubts about that. Again, with this felony murder statute, it does not matter.
No.
If they intended to kill Preston Lord or not, the prosecution does not have to prove that.
Doesn't have to prove intent. Now, what they do still have to prove is causation. So they have to prove that in the course of that kidnapping, it caused the death. This is going to be the defense for some of these kids,
mm-hmm,
right? Now, some of them clearly did cause the death. So now we're going back to what we talked about last time, is who kicked him in the head, who was throwing hammer punches, what injuries actually caused that death, because that's when you have actually a plausible defense from some of these co-defendants if their actions maybe didn't cause the death. You don't need intent, but you still need causation.
That's right. So that was an interesting thing that we discovered in terms of how these kids are being charged. They're exposed to felony murder. And so honestly, that's a problem for them. It makes it way easier for the prosecution to prove this case when you don't have to prove intent to kill.
Yeah.
Russ, it makes the job a lot easier. And again, we talked about leverage. I absolutely think probably right now, there are some of these kids meeting with their attorneys, talking about who they're going to give up, because they don't want to be staring at life in prison without the possibility of parole here.
I'll tell you right now, I would be surprised if proffers, and a proffer is when you go talk to the DA and give them evidence, give them information. I would be surprised if proffers were not occurring right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because oftentimes in cases like these, you want to be the first to it. Because once the DA has enough good evidence, maybe they'll stop giving deals,
mm-hmm,
because they don't need anyone else. So this may be a race to turn on their buddies. We'll see if there's any honor among thieves in the Gilbert goons, you know, because I'm guessing there's not.
Probably not. I don't think, just one other thing at this point, I don't think Travis Renner, the dad, has been charged with anything.
Nope.
That I've seen. There's been no developments there. So we'll continue to monitor this thing. Russ, we got anything else on the Gilbert Goons right now?
I don't think so. We'll keep you guys updated again on this one, too. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear it. But right now, let's kind of move on to our favorite segment. Let's be honest.
It really is our favorite segment. It's my favorite segment. I can't wait. Russ, what is it time for?
It is time for...
O-T!
Dub Joe!
The Dumb Criminal of the Week.
So, this week, Colin.
Yes.
We're traveling a ways. We're heading to the land down under.
Australia.
We're going to the land of Nicole Kidman and Mel Gibson.
Awesome.
So, Sydney, Australia. Two masked men wielding machetes barge into a club, and they order the patrons onto the floor. They tell the employees to empty the cash registers. Now, Colin, they were masked and they had machetes, but what they failed to take into consideration was that there was a monthly meeting of a bikers club. Ooh. And I'm not talking about road bikes.
I'm not talking about Tour de France.
We're talking about hogs.
And they're like rock.
We're talking about some motorcycles. And there was a motorcycle club that was meeting in the next room. They heard the commotion, and all of these bikers came out. The hunters quickly became the hunted as the bikers attacked the two men with tables, chairs, and basically anything that wasn't bolted down. One of these guys jumped through a plate glass window and off a balcony to try to get away from these bikers. So that guy ended up in the hospital. The other guy made a break for it through the service entrance. The bikers caught up to him before he made it over a neighbor's fence. They tackled him and, Colin, they hogtied him with electrical wire and left him back there for the police. I have just a great quote from Jerry Van Cornwall.
Who it has to be a real name.
I mean, it is. Who is the leader of the bikers. His quote, Jerry says, "These guys were absolutely dumb as bricks," he told CNN. "I can't believe they saw all the bikes parked up front and they were so stupid they walked past and in."
Wow.
So, I mean, you have these guys walking past. I'm picturing lines of probably like 30, 40 motorcycles lined up outside. They're like, "Let's go rob this place."
With machetes, no doubt.
With machetes.
Oh, my gosh, man. That's a good one. So one guy jumps out a window. I mean.
And there's actually there's another good quote from the owner about that. The owner's like, "All he had to do was push a button and it opened automatically." So, maybe for effect, you know?
Well, it's like the old saying, you know, when God closes a door, he opens up another window. or not, I guess, in this case.
Not in this case.
You know, a window that you have to jump through and cut yourself and go to the hospital for.
Well, the good news, Colin, is these two yahoos are probably going to be found not guilty because they're going to end up in a kangaroo court.
Australia,
you get it, because they're in Australia.
Russ, that was a good one, man. I especially enjoy the fact that it was in Australia. So, I guess we have to rate our knuckleheads 1 out of 5. How stupid are these guys? Russ, what's your take?
I'm going to give them a 4. I think that it's they probably would have been successful had there not been the biker meeting. Now, obviously, so they would have been at like a 0 or a 1, but they get several knuckleheads for walking past all the bikes.
Yeah.
And then if you end up hogtied with the electrical wire
electrical
and left in the yard, like that's at least a 4, I say.
Yeah, I'm going to say 4 as well. That feels right. These guys are stupid. I mean, I suppose they did wear masks. They came in armed, but what good did that do them?
None. 0 good.
All right. Well, that's a good one, Russ. We'll end it there, I think. Hey, This is where we ask for listener feedback. If you have an idea for an episode, if you want to let us know how we're doing, let us know how we're not doing.
Go give us a 5-star review if you enjoy it and you haven't yet. Yeah, we're always looking for those.
I always tell you to do that at the top of every episode. I'm actually sick of repeating myself, so just go get it done. Right. Then you don't have to do it again. But leave us a review. If you want to contact us directly, though, best way is email. DenverCrimeLaw@gmail.com is our email address. You can find us on Facebook at Hebbets McCallan. You can also find us on X at Is This Legal Pod. Russ, got anything else?
Nothing else. Be safe, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Johnny Law looked at me. Said, Jebediah, can't you see them things you're doing just ain't right? Going around this town, stirring up a fright. Won't get far driving in your motor car. Look Cornelius right in the eye. Said you ain't got proof, I ain't the guy. Said I may not wear no crown upon my head. I may not be regal. Tell me one thing, Cornelius, my friend. Is it legal